Now we're moving into the third argument for God's existence. We're on lesson 45. We're talking about the fine-tuning in the universe. So what we're doing here now is we're moving into another part of scientific evidence that validates the fact that there's a supernatural outside cause for the universe. So let's take a look at the premises behind this argument. The first premise: precision in a system infers an intelligent designer. Premise two, there's great precision in the universe. Therefore, it follows that there must be an intelligent designer of the universe. Our verse today that we look at for lesson 45 comes out of Jeremiah chapter 32. Ah, Lord God, behold, you have made the heavens and the earth by your great power and outstretched arm. There's nothing too hard for you. Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, saying, behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Again, in the Bible, over and over again, it confirms the fact that God claims that he is the one who is the maker of all things. So let's take a look now and get a little better idea of what leading scientists say about fine-tuning. The first scientist, click your screen, that we'll read is William Phillips, PhD in physics, the 1997 Nobel Prize winner, professor of physics at the University of Maryland. He says, I believe in a personal God who acts in and interacts with the creation. I believe the observations about the orderliness of the universe and the apparent exceptional fine-tuning of the conditions of the universe for the development of life suggest an intelligent creator is responsible. I believe in God because of a personal faith consistent with what I know about science. In other words, he's saying that his science is consistent with what he sees in reality in the universe and what he sees in the God of the Bible. Then we have Fred Hoyle, Cambridge professor of astrophysicist and philosophy. Now listen to him. Some super calculating intellect must have designed the properties of the carbon atom. Otherwise, the chance of my finding such an atom through the blind forces of nature would be utterly minuscule. He's very famous for doing experiments and studying how the carbon atom comes together, and he found precision in just that atom that led him to believe there has to be a God. A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as with chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. The numbers one calculates from the facts seem so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question. This is phenomenal. Another very learned scientist saying there has to be an intellect. Things are just too precise. Now, Tony Rothman, PhD in theoretical physicist and lecturer in cosmology and physics at Princeton University, says this. When confronted with the order and beauty of the universe and the strange coincidences of nature, it's very tempting to take the leap of faith from science into religion. I'm sure many physicists want to. I only wish they'd admit it. Scientists know this. This isn't a well-kept secret. Where it's being a well-kept secret is from our teenagers in our schools. This needs to be taught. This needs to be taught in our churches so that our teenagers understand the mounting evidence over and over again for the fact that there has to be a mind, a God, behind the behavior of the universe, the precision. Now let's go to slide 3 as we look at fine-tuning a little more. And now we're going to be breaking down what God says in his word in Psalm 19. And we're going to begin here in lesson 45 with the first 4 verses. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line goes out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. So let's go ahead and break down what's being said here by the Lord in the Old Testament book of Psalms. First, when he says the heavens, what he means is the space-time mass universe. It's the same as the word for heavens in Genesis 1:1. Declare. That word means to continuously declare. There's non-stop preaching that's happening every moment, day and night. The glory of God, splendor and significance. This is the significant glory and majesty of God can be seen by simply looking at his handiwork in the heavens. And then firmament. This is a word that refers to space, the spread out thinness, same as used in the first chapter of Genesis. So the heavens, that the universe itself, declares the splendor and glory of God, and the space declares and shows his handiwork, which the word in the Hebrew means his labor or activity. Now, what's interesting is people who claim, well, why doesn't God just show himself? Look what it says in this verse going forward. There is no speech nor language. That means that the heavens are declaring in every language. Everyone can understand it. No one misses what they're seeing in the skies and the heavens, where his voice isn't heard. The line goes out through all the earth to the end of the earth. What does that mean? That the heavens are preaching in every corner of the world. Nobody misses this. It doesn't matter where you live, in the jungles of Borneo, in the city of New York, anywhere. He's preaching through his universe, his stars, the heavens. He's preaching day unto day and night unto night, 24 hours with no intermission. And there's no speech or language that's missed. Every person can understand what they're seeing. And there's no place anyone can hide because the universe is preaching to everyone in every corner of the world. This is just the beginning. Psalm 19 makes it clear God has revealed this precision of his universe to everyone. That's lesson 45.